This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and today I'm joined by two gentlemen from the Johnson County Tourism Association. Good afternoon, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Brian Whitlock, I'd like to welcome you, and Toby Carrig. Brian, you are a board member for the Johnson County Tourism Association, and Toby, you're relatively new to town, but you are in a full-time position here as marketing director and supported by Kristen de Gallard, who's also the administrative assistant here. The association has two full-time employees, Brian. That sounds expensive. How are you funded and what do you do with your money?
It's been a big jump for us this year. A lot of people don't know what the lodging tax does and way that we are funded. So we are funded by the lodging tax. It is, in essence, collected when somebody stays in any of our hospitality in Johnson County. And it's how we use it. That money is then used to then market and, you know, to bring people in here and those kind of things. So that's our biggest part.
So really, in essence, you're not actually funded by local residents and taxpayers of Johnson County. You're funded by visitors.
Correct.
To Johnson County.
Yeah, actually, the lodging tax is, just like you said, Kate, it actually helps offset our tax-ish, you know, situations that we have in our own community because of this lodging tax.
So what is the funding for JCT? It sounds like it goes up and down every year because you get money from last year, I assume, which will fund this year. But what sort of sums of money are you working with?
Obviously this is all public funds, so anybody can see this. I mean, it kind of varies year by year, you know, month by month. You know, there'll be months that are up, there's months that are down. The average annual is about $250,000, is what it currently,
our lodging tax currently. So you're operating on about $500,000 a year?
No.
$250,000 a year.
$250,000,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay, 250.
Yeah, 250,000.
And that's grown about 80% over the last decade. So
Correct. There
was a time when the county was has revenue about $130,000 10 years ago, and that has grown. 2022, I think, was a peak year, about $270,000. And we've seen a little bit of a slip statewide with tourism since that high point. But hopefully we'll use the marketing dollars to keep that growth and momentum going.
So let's come back and talk about lodging tax again in a moment. But first of all, what do you do? What is the job and the role of the Johnson County Tourism Association?
That has been a big topic. I mean, you know, obviously in the community, people are trying to figure out what every organization does, how we all talk and how we all influence each other. The best way I've had to explain it to people is that our job is to get people here so that way they can enjoy our community.
I would have thought that then most people within Johnson County aren't really aware of what you're doing because you're really talking outside of the community to encourage visitors to come in. How do you do that, Toby?
So we really focus on a circle of about 2 hours outside of Johnson County. So you're going Billings and beyond into Montana and Rapid City and beyond into South and Dakotas and through the Midwest and then Cheyenne down through Denver. And those are very popular corridors for the current tourists that do come to town. That's where they're coming from. So we use a variety of tools. We have four components in our marketing program. That includes print, media. So we use some magazines, South Dakota Magazine, a magazine in Denver area called 5280, and then we use True West Magazine and some others that are more related to people who might travel in the West based on their interests.
So those are those for general consumers or are those trade publications?
General consumers, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So now, you're talking direct to a potential visitor?
Correct.
And what is it about that sort of beyond our two-hour radius, what is it about that is the cause for the focus?
It's the more likely overnight stayer. And when you look at our data for demographics of where people are who are staying two or more nights in this market, they are Billings, Rapid City, Denver, and a place like Chicago, a lot of people out of Texas. So it's, you know, it's not, if you're in Gillette, you're likely, you might come over and have dinner, spend some time here in a day, but you might not do that overnight stay. And since our funding is lodging tax and overnight stays, that's really our focus, is to have people who are going to come and stay for multiple nights.
So that sounds as if we're talking about the kind of traveler who's moving on to somewhere else fairly quickly. They're not coming here for a week or a 10-day vacation.
There's a mix. So we have a lot of the single-night stays that are going from Rushmore to Yellowstone or vice versa. That's certainly a big part of our overnight group. But then once they decide they want to stay here, we're seeing an average stay of 2.4 nights. So we have a lot of people who are staying, and a lot of people are staying 6-plus nights. So they're, you know, booking into a guest ranch and making that their vacation, is to be here for a long period of time, enjoy the recreation and all the different things there are to do.
So presumably then we are competing against people stopping in Gillette or Sheridan or Billings even, or maybe on the other side of the mountain in Warland or Thermopolis or wherever it is. What is it about Buffalo and Johnson County that encourages people to stop? What are the highlights that makes them think, oh, that's my place, that's the opportunity for my overnight?
That's a good question, because when we face, as you notice, we've got billboards strategically placed every avenue in and out of Buffalo. I mean, that's kind of the idea, is be able to grab that person's attention, be able to get them to, you know, recognize that they can stay here, that we are, you know, that pivotal. And the nice thing about Buffalo is it's more centrally located, whereas, you know,
we do have the intersection of those interstates. Yes.
We have the intersection between whether you're going, I mean, we know there's people that, oh, people go from Worland to Gillette to shop, or, you know, Casper to Billings, or, you know, we're in, kind of in that corridor where if we can hit the right people, you know, and I hate to say it this way, but it's the only way to say it, we don't want to lose them because they drive onto a bigger community like Sheridan. And so where they can get in, you know, access to, you know, other things, like we want to get them to stop here, whereas there's such a short distance between the two communities.
Of course, whether you love visitors coming to our town and our county or whether you don't, we have to accept that they're an important part of our economic structure. How well placed is Johnson County to keep those visitors coming? Do we have the sorts of things that travelers from those areas are wanting to experience?
I think we have definitely a multiple day itinerary that people can create if they're coming here. We have, you know, obviously a great museum with the Jim Gatchell Museum in town. We have a very nice historic site up in the north part of the county at Fort Phil Kearny and their related sites as well. And they are visiting a new building a new visitor center there that's going to enhance the experience for people checking that place out. Obviously, I have Crazy Woman Canyon, a lot of other recreational opportunities. You have the Dry Creek Petrified Tree area that you can hike around, and the Bighorn Mountains, of course, numerous trails up there, you know, trails through the city that you can take. So, you know, you can easily build a multiple-day enjoyable itinerary and have a variety of experiences here. And we haven't even talked about, you know, the shopping, the different restaurants that people can eat at, and, you know, places like the Occidental.
Less restaurants than there used to be, unfortunately. Is that going to be a problem for us this season?
It's going to put some pressure on the ones that are remaining. I think we're net down two at the moment, or two or three, and then possibly have some coming back in. So, but hopefully, you know, there's still a good variety, and there's still some great places to eat, and some places that are well-known, and hopefully we'll have a good business this summer.
Yeah, that's probably one of our biggest concerns with getting people here. And obviously, you know, the more tourists we have in the community, you know, it's a huge help for our restaurants, you know, and any demographic. I mean, I think tourism, Toby, correct me if I'm wrong, but tourism is second when in regards to all the revenue that's brought into this community, behind agriculture. And so if we don't have the tourism, I mean, that's the reason that, you know, we may not be able to keep our restaurants open, our hotels open, things like that. And so the more people we can get to come here, it helps offset, you know, the restaurant's need for, you know, local community members to go to them. It helps keep them open longer, especially when we have annual tourism, so that way they can keep their employees. I mean, it's a huge help to our community.
That raises a good point, which is that I think we typically think of this season, we're talking in early June, we're talking this season through to Labor Day as our very busy tourist season, but there are still things to do here the rest of the year. Are there plans to expand the activities and things that are available for visitors and to directly attract them to what would be considered off-season visits?
And we use some of our revenue we set aside into a grant program that we work with events and organizers in the community who want to put on events that'll attract people to town. And we look throughout the year, but we do want to put priority for those events that take place in the shoulder seasons, in the fall and the winter and spring. So we fund the Bluegrass Camp, and one of their additional events was the January Jam and the Songs of the West, I believe, that they had this spring. So those are not typical in-season events that we help promote and fund. The TA Ranch does the Fire and Ice Festival that they had this year. We provided funding for that so they could market their event as well. We're not in the business of organizing events. We will work with organizers that are putting things together and try to help them with marketing, even with just simple advice of, you know, how to use social media, and then actual funding that'll help them either place advertisements or use social media in a targeted way. We definitely want to grow the events throughout the year and work with people that are willing to put events together. You and I were at the meeting where the community rink was talking the other day, and I had a chance to talk with them the last couple of days. You know, if they want to do a pond hockey tournament or a winter event, that's certainly something we'd be interested in helping them promote and get the word out on.
So I think what you're saying is if you have a local business or an idea that you think may attract people who are not resident to Johnson County, then you are available as a resource to help them promote that and maybe devise the event and so on and just sort of promote it and talk more widely. So going back to who you're talking to every day, Toby, you mentioned the Beyond Our Tour corridor and so on, and that's direct to the traveller themselves. Do you also talk and promote Johnson County to professional tour operators and so on?
We do. So we are actually going to have a trade show that we'll be participating in September of this year that's going to bring tour operators to Casper. So then they will be coming through Buffalo on their way to Casper. So we're going to have an opportunity to host them here in the market for a day and an overnight stay. And then once they're in Casper, we'll have an opportunity to follow up with them, talk to them about itineraries that they can build to bring people to Buffalo. We recently, in April, attended the International Roundup, which is promoted by the five states in the Great American West. So you've got Montana, the Dakotas, Idaho, and Wyoming are all combined and targeting European markets. So that event brought in some tour operators from different parts of Europe, as well as New Zealand, Australia, and we were able to meet one-on-one with a lot of them. Many of them very familiar already and have itineraries coming through Buffalo. I think they estimate that last year we had more than 2,200 room nights that were booked as part of those itineraries.
And so those organized tours that you sort of classically think of with sort of people getting off a large bus and tottering around for a while and then getting back on the bus and moving on to the next place, is that the sort of operator that you're describing?
It's kind of a mix. Some of those are like that, but they're finding a lot of individual travelers or small groups. You know, so you've got a family of four or a group of six friends, and they're traveling together and building these itineraries. And obviously they want to, you know, see Yellowstone, see Mount Rushmore, but we are a big part of those itineraries for them to stay a night in Buffalo too.
I think it's very easy if you've lived here for a while, and you know, I'm guilty of this, even though, as everybody knows, I'm not from around here originally, that you can become a little kind of jaded as to the beauty that we have here and how entirely different it is here than for many people who come and visit, and they are astonished about our big expansive open spaces and our beautiful blue skies and horses and all that nature just right there on display, right in front of you. And for some people, that is an astonishing experience. And we forget that.
Oh yeah, well, it's great when you have visitors and you can see how they, you know, the look on their face when they're checking out downtown or see the creek running through. And that was, you know, part of the neat thing when we had the International Roundup in April. They came through and spent a little bit of time in Buffalo after that event. So we had 17 tour operators who came up and toured the Gatchel Museum and then got to walk down through the town, see the Occidental, see the creek and the downtown, and just seeing their reaction to it. It was like they'd been in Casper for 3 or 4 days, and you know, there's such a different vibe than even Casper has. And they were real impressed and said, yeah, this is the real West that we want to visit and tell our people to visit. So it's neat to see, you know, the look on their face and see how impressed they are with it.
I suppose that underscores, you know, the value in maybe preserving some of our, you know, really authentic historical attractions and so on. You know, those things that we have here, you know, we must remember that they are of value presumably.
Yes.
And
yeah.
We, as I say, you know, it's easy to forget. If you live here all the time, it's easy to forget that those things are precious and attractive to other people.
Mm-hmm.
What have you actually been doing? I know that you have a new website.
I do.
And that was a pretty significant endeavor. It's very fancy, and I will post a link to it here. But from what you've been describing, that pretty much encapsulates a lot of how Johnson County is marketed and presented outwards.
We wanted a place where everything was, where a person could, you know, try to figure out what they all could do in Johnson County in one location. And that's kind of the goal behind it. That way they could figure out what campgrounds are available, where they could stay, where are places they could eat. I guess you'd call it a one shop meets all kind of idea, where they could go and be like, hey, you know, they've got a tour to here down Clear Creek, and you can, you know, hopefully, you know, the vision, you know, whether, you know, what we look at, you know, hopefully renting bikes and, you know, different things. And those are the kind of the vision with the website, is to be able to help people understand what we can do. Because like you say, we have so many hidden gems here that people, they just drive through and they don't realize that they are there. And we know them because we live here. We're part of the community. And we just see them like all day long. And people that we get to come here, they want to have an experience. They want to, you know, like Toby was saying earlier, you know, that idea of one thing you can connect with anybody on is art and history. Most people appreciate those things. So when they can go on our website and see, you know, where all the murals are and things like that, that way they can connect that feel good art idea and see what Johnson County has to offer, especially like the museums and talking about Johnson County War and all those things. It is huge for people when they're learning about it, because people connect when they're visiting, they connect emotions with obviously sight. Obviously the more senses you have on a situation, the more times you'll have reoccurring people come back and then understand how we think, how we believe, what we do in this community as compared to other places in the world and, you know, even in this country.
Indeed. So this season, there's been a lot of conversation about the Camporee event, which is going to be happening in Gillette in early August, right at the same time as Sturgis, right after our own Johnson County Fair and Rodeo, and slap bang in the middle of our road construction season. The timing could be better, some would say. It is a massive influx of Seventh-day Adventist visitors. On the whole, they're younger visitors. It's aimed at youth. It's more like a youth-oriented event, but they are camping, and they're billed to be 55,000 or more at the complex in Gillette, and we're expecting to see push-out from that, either people travelling to and from and wanting to stay here, or people from Gillette saying, I need to escape. This is too much. My life is not going to be normal for this week. What are you anticipating?
That's a good question. We'll find out for sure. And Kristen has been doing a great job getting the word out to anyone and everyone. We attend meetings and we'll certainly bring it up. She has visited the hotels and restaurants and businesses and made them aware that this is happening. We had a one-page flyer that Jimmy, the emergency management director, did, and he shared with the Chamber of Commerce at a meeting, and we have also been sharing that information with whoever wants to see it. So we're getting the word out, because if people need to know about gas and groceries and those sort of things, it's better for them to know now and be able to make plans for it. In terms of the tourism components, I mean, our hotels, I believe, are pretty much booked up at that time frame.
And at higher prices, too. I know that there have been some conversations about the way that Gillette has, the lodging places there have dramatically increased their prices, and there is some disconcertion about that.
Sheridan as well.
Yes, and so, you know, I mean, I think the word is if you're planning on just stopping in Buffalo for the night in early August, you're probably not going to get a place. It's going to be a pretty significant event. And if somebody is listening and they don't know this, I did do a separate interview with Jimmy Catalina, our emergency management coordinator, about exactly what the event is, and I'll share a link to that alongside this too. But we don't really know what's going to happen, do we?
No, other than our hotel rooms will be full. And, you know, we're going to hope to be able to work with people who need housing, a place to stay. that, you know, we can send them to Casey. Might still have some openings at the moment. And we'll be communicating with them throughout the year, too, to see how things are progressing for those lodging establishments as well. Because we want to make sure people come here that they, you know, aren't stranded and don't feel like they have help. So we'll definitely, you know, our phone number is on our website. Krista and I have talked. We expect people might call us after hours, and, you know, that's...
Is there any sort of contingency plan? Is there any sort of emergency plan if people can't get a hotel room? What do they do?
That's would be a topic for some other parts of the city too. And we'd be glad to work with them and get the word out if there are plans to take place. I know there's been discussions internally, but it really has to come from some of the other components in the community to make some decisions on that as well.
Well, this swell of tourists and visitors leads us back neatly to the issue of lodging tax. It sounds as if we're in for a really good year of visitors, and, you know, whether you like visitors or not, they are important to our economy, and a lot of our businesses do survive on visitors.
Absolutely.
There is talk of an increase in the lodging tax, and, you know, as you mentioned earlier, Brian, the lodging tax is very specifically for those people who are visiting, so it is only paid on your hotel room, for example, or your Airbnb or your VRBO. It is not what residents pay. They don't pay it on the back of their restaurant ticket and so on. But it is that. And the Tourism Association is leading a charge to increase the tax from 5% to 7%, a 2% increase. That sounds quite a lot. How does that compare with other communities?
It's a good question. When we've compared it to a lot of other communities, we're still, you know, behind the ball comparatively to the other communities. I mean, Sheridan is much more than that. As we know, you know, places like Jackson are way more.
They're 12%.
They're right at 12. And so, you know, the idea behind this is, just like you said, I mean, it's beautifully said, is in the economy we're facing right now, everybody's concerned about taxes. I mean, everybody's concerned about their money and where it's going. And, you know, it's a very obviously difficult economic situation right now. And so what we're trying to, you know, help portray to people is the fact that unless you stay in Johnson County, you don't pay this tax. This is the tax that is paid by the tourist. So that way they can stay here. I mean, that's the best way to explain it. And so that way this increase in tax will help, you know, give us more money to help keep our restaurants open. I mean, that is
so
what it comes down to.
How would that work? Because you get that there will be a bucket, which would be the revenue that from lodging tax from that 7%, and that comes back into Johnson County. How would it actually go back into a restaurant?
It's a great question. So the idea is it all comes full circle. So obviously as we market more and we are able to bring more people into our community, then the goal, the vision, you know, you look at demand supply scales. Obviously, there's a huge demand that kicks up during the summertime. Our restaurants, as we've seen, have kicked up very handily during the summertime. They're trying to, you know, several have gone out of business. Some of them are opening up more hours, things like that. But the detriment to a business is the fact that during the wintertime, everything slows down. And that if they didn't make hay while the sun shines, you know, that idea, then they really struggle during the wintertime and they lay people off and they can't keep their employees. And so the goal behind this is what we want to do is create even marketing so that way we have consistent people coming here to keep our restaurants open, keep our hotels
in
business.
So you wouldn't actually be giving a handout to a restaurant.
Correct.
You would just be creating customers.
It's a contiguous situation brought on by the money that we spend.
That doesn't address the problem which I think virtually every employer seems to be experiencing, which is finding people to work. And it's a complete conundrum because everybody wants people to work and nobody knows where to find them. And where are the people who were working before, where have they gone? And I've been looking for a satisfactory answer for some months and not found one. But the reality is that employers can't find people to work. That does nothing to address that problem.
Yeah, it comes down to, I sit on a different board that we've created, that's a workforce housing board. And that's a whole topic for another day and we can talk about that. But the goal behind it, like you said, is in the situation of an economy where people can't afford to live here, that, you know, are able to work in those types of fields, it's very hard for them to afford housing. And so never have I ever seen, you know, we actually have people coming to Buffalo to work. It used to be the other way, where people would live here because they wanted to live here, and they would go to Gillette to work. Now I see it the opposite, where people have to live in Gillette and sometimes drive here to work, and because they can't afford to live here. And it's a very, very huge, concerning situation. And so as we go down the idea of, like you say, we need to be able to get the money into there, so that way they, you know, into the community to be able to keep, you know, the, you know, be able to help keep wages up, things like that. So that way they can incentivize people to be able to come here and work. It is a huge thing.
It is a major problem that our community needs to address. And I know that there are initiatives going on, and Brian, you're included in one of those groups too. But it is a problem which is echoed, and I've heard multiple employers, the larger employers in our community, struggling. They get great applicants. Getting people to come and want to work here with great credentials is not difficult. Getting them to actually find a place to live that they can afford to live in is really been a significant hurdle, and continues to be. So I hope that we see some resolution to that sooner rather than later, because there will be other communities who are dealing with that issue and who will then become more attractive, and we potentially could lose out.
Yeah, the biggest detriment to our community will be, and obviously we live in a community that is very based in tradition, which can be a good thing and can be a bad thing, obviously. And I, and people will say this, and, you know, people will disagree with me or not, but like you said, people don't like tourism. Some people do, some people don't do. And the goal behind it is, if Buffalo is going to grow, the best thing to do is to manage the growth healthily. That way it grows properly. If we don't do that, then everything just runs amok and we don't know where things are going. And then we have communities that fail because there's such a disparity between your moderate income and your high income. And there's no one to work in the moderate income.
I suppose you could point to Jackson.
Correct.
As an example of that, where house prices are so astronomically high that you lose a whole workforce.
Correct. And, you know, and we don't need to name names, that's not important, but like there's a business that came into the community that they're from, not from here, that I work with, and they were used to paying their employees at a almost $7 an hour decrease from what you have to pay people here, so that way they can live here. And they're like, we don't know if we can afford to stay in business here. And I'm like, well, you're going to have to afford to pay that, because people can't afford to live here if you cut their wages. And once they recognized that, they were like, oh my goodness, like, we literally have to pay them more so that way they will work and not literally go down the road to somebody else that's paying an average minimum salary, you know, of $7 more an hour, which was hugely different.
Well, big issues to tackle.
Huge issues.
Huge issues to tackle. And
one small part we're able to maybe help with that in the future and have worked with a little bit is, we now have a relationship with the Wyoming Outdoor Recreation, Tourism and Hospitality Initiative at the University of Wyoming, and they do training sessions. So if there is an opportunity where we have workforce that needs to be trained in hospitality, they can provide that. And we actually had a hospitality training session with them this week that they came to town and ran a couple of sessions for a couple hours. So, you know, if it gets to a point in the future where we have groups of people who need to be trained, we can assist in probably setting some of that up, or at least building that relationship between employers and the WORTH initiative to do that.
Yeah, it's a really great program, because obviously, you know, for any employer in this world, you know, finding good employees is really hard, and then keeping them is even harder. And then the training that's associated. Sometimes business owners, they come in and they just slam somebody into a position, and it's really hard to get them trained. And that's why we're so excited for what Toby said, is that the idea that way, when, you know, a person gets a good employee, they can be trained, especially in the hospitality market. So that way they know how to deal with people, especially when you're in any disparity. And obviously, you know, wages come into a scenario, but where you're dealing, let's say you're, you know, somebody that is taking, you know, a wait staff as an example at a restaurant, that way you know if somebody, you know, how to handle somebody of high net worth versus somebody of moderate worth. And then that way you know how to handle them if somebody is, you know, or when they're mean or when they're nice. You know, all those things that, you know, can cause employers to lose employees because they don't know how to handle situations. You know, there's no situational awareness on how they can handle different scenarios. So I love what Toby said because it's been a great asset to our community to be able to offer this so that way people can keep the employees that they have.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for giving us a glimpse into the work of the Johnson County Tourism Association. As I say, it's something that typically people who live and work here don't see, and they're not intended to see. We're just supposed to see the benefits and reap the benefits of your hard work. And what's clear to me is that there is a great deal of resource that's available to all sorts of different kinds of businesses here, and that, you know, people should come by and take a look. But I would also encourage people to look at the website, because I was astonished at the way that everything Johnson County is packaged up so beautifully. And there really is, it really is a deep cross-section, everything you could ever imagine about what this place has to offer. And there are some things that I didn't even know about.
And it's going to grow more. So it added a lot of visual components to it. You know, we have images of every restaurant and every hotel, every campground, every guest ranch are on that website. And we have an opportunity to grow more with retail and attractions and things. So there'll be more information going on there to make that site even more robust in the future. And more, you know, there are currently more than 32 events on there. So, you know, the rodeos, the cemetery walk that we were talking about, just all these different events, all the events at Fortville Kearney, those are all showing up on the events page, so when you come to town, you make plans to come down, you know what's going on in addition to all the things that are all here all the time.
Yeah, it really is very comprehensive and a great resource to go back to, even if you're just here and you're wondering what to do with your family who's here for the weekend and you're looking for something slightly different. There's a lot of ideas and opportunities there, so thank you very much indeed. And thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.